Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
So we're recording on Sunday morning. Last night, I went to bed at 8:30. How late did you stay up, Alex?
I pushed a boat out and I was in bed with my vegan hot chocolate and Walter Hottle bottle at 9:15 p.m.
This is a Saturday night we're talking about. Well, I'm the mad old stop out here. Go on. I started watching the Brits at 8:30.
And you just got gripped. Go on.
And should have left a lot earlier, but eventually just ducked out at 10 o'clock. Can I just say the Brits is embarrassing?
Is it?
It's genuinely embarrassing. It used to sort of stand for something. I know I'm going to sound like a real old person here, but A, it's aimed primarily at people under 20. None of them watch telly anyway, and they certainly aren't watching telly at 8:30 on a Saturday night. Secondly, it used to be hosted by one person. It was James Corden or it was Ben Elton or whatever. Whether you liked them or you didn't, they were kind of in control and it had some kind of footing and it had some gravitas. And you seemed to know what it was about. There's no reason for the Brits at the moment, and it's never explained why it's taking place. The difference between that and the BAFTAs is absolutely amazing, really. It makes the Brits look like the music industry. The kids have taken over the TV for one night. So you had three presenters, Roman Kemp, who's the son of Martin Kemp, and Clara Amfo from Radio 1, and a girl from Love Island, who spent the entire time saying how iconic it was. There was
Iconic.
Iconic was the word. How long will it be before someone says it's iconic?
Do you remember that episode of Frasier years ago where the three of them were Martin, Niles and Frasier sat there watching Antiques Roadshow? And every time somebody said veneer, they would all have a drink.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
they go,
yes.
Veneer, yes! Well, yeah. It ought to be the same with the word iconic on the Brits, didn't it? Iconic. Everybody
would have
been a drink.
Three sheets to the wind within 10 minutes. Oh, my God, it was unbelievable.
It's a new
also,
amazing,
terrible
isn't it?
Note earlier on. The first people on were Jo Hamilton, who's one of the postmistresses still waiting for compensation, and Monica Dolan, who played her in the ITV version of events. And they come on, they do this thing about how, you know, the postmasters and mistresses still haven't been paid and the government promised they would be paid and government, are you listening, et cetera, et cetera. And then you go from that 2 minutes later to Roman Kemp trying to get Kylie Minogue to drink champagne out of a shoe. And you just think, this is just embarrassing and awful and awkward, you know. But one of the things about it was that there was stuff about it the last few days, actually, on social media about the fact that there weren't any bands. The best band category had virtually no bands in it. I thought that was an interesting point, actually, as to what had happened to bands. Is there still an appetite for bands? Are there as many bands? Is it more difficult to be in a band? Do people want to be in bands? I don't know.
What do you think, Alex? You are in a band from time to time.
From time to time.
Have you noticed whether people are keen on it or not?
Well, I have a theory, half-baked the way it may be, that bands came about like so many other things in history quite accidentally at a time when they were absolutely needed for practical reasons. people needed connection and they needed resources. And we live in an era now where both of those things are in plentiful supply instantaneously to anybody. So, you know, I think the impetus for a lot of bands forming back in the day was to find like-minded souls and form a gang and just kind of feel like you were part of something, which is, when you're a teenager, it's really, really important, you know, part of your social fabric. And everything's taken online now. And when all your friends or all your mates are on Fortnite or Snapchat or Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, and you can see what they're up to all the time and you can communicate them.
Yeah, that's
you
true,
want.
Actually.
There's no point. And also, you're making friends with people who aren't your friends from across the world, because that's how social media works, you know. So people find their tribe in a completely different way. And also, you know, I mean, certainly when I was at school, you needed someone to play bass. You needed someone to be a singer because you couldn't do it. You needed someone to record it. You know, there was no other way. There was no other way to be able to make music aside from getting other people with skill sets you didn't have involved. Whereas now you've got Logic. Everybody's got a studio at home, and everybody seems to be a bit of a polymath as well. I think kids are growing up, you know, with a lot wider skill sets than anybody ever has. And, you know, the need to form a band, it's just not necessary anymore. Why would you?
Because it's hard work. That's the thing.
It is, because also you're managing the personalities of five other kids, you know, and kids' personalities are hard to manage anyway, you know.
Do you ever hear, Alex, you won't know this because you're way too young, but Tony Hancock, the British comedian, one of his legendary programs, used to be called The Sunday Afternoon at Home. Do you remember that, Mark?
Tony Hancock. I do.
And basically, it was Tony Hancock and Bill Kerr and Sid James and Hattie Jakes sitting around in their sort of flat in East Cheam on a Sunday afternoon in the late 50s and the early 60s. And basically, the joke was, in those days, there was literally nothing to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing to do. The pubs were closed. There was nothing on the television. You know, the cinema might open, but it won't open until 7:30 or whatever. And it's in that, against that background of nothing to do, that the great British bands were invented. You know, they were conspiracies against the tedium of everyday life. You know, that if you wanted to form a group, it was really hard to do. You imagine, in those days, they'd have to take their instruments on buses across Liverpool or London or whatever to meet the rest of the band, you know, to get together and to rehearse and so forth. Nobody goes to that much trouble for anything any longer. They simply don't, because all the diversion in the world is available at the end of your fingertips, isn't it? You know, you don't need that. You don't need to go anywhere at all. And so, you know, bands used to be one of the ways of dealing with that, you know, of putting something in your life that wasn't there before. Whereas people now have so much in their lives, or they feel that they have so much in their lives, that they don't feel the same urge to do it, you know.
And that's such a good point. That's really good.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say that picking up what Alex was saying about being part of those WhatsApp groups, that's an interesting point too, and it's probably true. You know, I've got mates who've got kids who were in bands and they're now in fantasy football leagues on WhatsApp or whatever. And actually, weirdly, that makes them feel connected with the same people that they were in the band with. And it may have replaced it. I can't believe it's totally replaced it, because, you know, the fantasy when I was a kid was kind of joining a gang like the Faces. You looked at the Faces and thought, I'd like to be in the Faces. If you were 15 in 1977, why wouldn't you want to be a member of Madness? Because, you know, being in a school group for me was something that gave you an immense amount of identity and status, actually. But I guess those things just aren't there anymore. Well, that's and it. I guess there's no appetite for it. And the other things are, it must be so hard to find the rehearsal space, and there's no circuits like there were where you could go out and just play. And also, I don't think there's an appetite among people to go out and pay money to go and see a group that they might never have heard of. Nobody takes a chance on things anymore.
The bigger pictures change as well, I think. You know, when I was growing up, the fantasy surrounding a band was, okay, we could join a band and perhaps if we're really good and we're really lucky, we could make lots of money. We could spend time with lots of exciting girls and we could get lots of free booze. And, you know, now the paradigm's completely changed. And everybody knows that being in a band is not a fast track to becoming a millionaire. The myth's been complete, the bubble's been completely popped, you know, so that end game isn't there. You know, hey guys, you want to join my band? We can be remotely skint and tour the UK together. It's not very attractive, is it? You know,
actually, that's another thing, is touring. But I think the great fantasy for the Sounds reader in the late 70s was being on the road with so and so band. Well, now everyone's been everywhere. You know, the idea that the Boomtown Rats were in Paris, you think, well, Paris sounds exciting, and the Boomtown Rats. Everyone's been everywhere, so none of that's interesting. And nobody travels anywhere anymore. Nobody goes on the road. And it was being on the road in that band that was the exciting thing. You couldn't imagine sitting around just rehearsing or writing songs. It was part of the fantasy at all. And that doesn't exist.
When the Dave Clark Five went to the United States in 1964, just after the Beatles had come back from their triumphant visit there in February 1964, the Dave Clark Five went to America, and I think I'm right in saying it was their first time out of the country. It was their first time on a plane. It was the first time they'd ever stayed in a hotel.
Incredible. All that one night.
Wow.
And they went and did the Ed Sullivan Show in New York, a big success. And he said, can you stay and be here next week? And so they said, well, yeah, but we don't want to stay in New York. It's too cold. And so he flew them down to Montego Bay or somewhere like that. And then they came back the following week. But the point being, they hadn't been anywhere at all. The notion that that would happen nowadays,
yeah,
you know, that anybody would join a band and,
might get to go to Miami. I've been to Miami loads of times. It'd be £23 on EasyJet.
I think, you know, Ryanair and EasyJet, they've kind of played their part in popping the bubble as well, because back in the day, people went on holiday to Wales in the summer. Anywhere beyond Barmouth was terribly exotic. You know, now everybody's been to Malaga or Tenerife, you know.
So tell me, I mean, this question of the circuit kind of interests me, because obviously the number of venues shrinks all the time. I mean, I was reading only this morning in the Times that I think 1,500 pubs closed in Britain last year. You know, I mean, these places, the smoking ban, all these things have really affected these businesses were pretty marginal in the first place. But was there ever a time when there were loads of venues and people just went along because there was a band on? You know what I mean? Even though they did not a band with hits or anything like that, because that's what people talk about, you know, the lack of interest in going to see bands that aren't people you've seen on television or whose records you know. I mean, was there ever a time when there was that kind of circuit? Was it, Alex, in your memory?
I mean, probably more than there is now, but I think people have always been, to an extent, wanting to be sure of what it is they're getting.
How strange is that?
I know, right? And so the prospect of taking a punt on a bunch of chances playing Mustang Sally, you know, it's not.
If only they were playing Mustang Sally, Alex. But if you put it outside the pub and, you know, and in big letters, band will play Mustang Sally. But you're not getting that with
they're
most
not,
of the
they're, they're playing their own material.
They're playing their own material.
Indeed, with another unknown. Which is a bit frightening.
I used to work at a venue in High Wycombe when I was at uni. it was the world's grimmest strip club in a day and a metal venue at night.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so it was quite a place. But we used to have bands on every night of the week. And after the ladies had gone home. Every night, 7 nights a week. In fact, the Kings of Leon played their first UK show there. I wasn't there, but there's an interview somewhere of them talking about it and being asked what the worst gig they've ever played in it was. And they were talking about this horrible hovel somewhere in the southeast of England that had very depressed ladies taking their clothes off during the day. It was the White Horse in High Wycombe, recently closed. But we used to have bands on 7 nights a week, and the venue was half full for one of them, probably. And this is.
But do you think people have gone along knowing nothing about them? Just think, I'll risk it. It's 35p, whatever.
No, I think all these bands pulled in there. Sometimes we had a well-known band like Block Party come through who would sell out the venue, who are clearly on their way up. But predominantly, it would be, you know, it would be Arse Curtains, you know, or someone like that.
The legendary Arse Curtains.
Bringing along their mates from Aylesbury and Hemel Hempstead. And it, you know, the success of the gig depended on how many mates the bands had and how bothered they could be to make the trip out. I think it was just all to do with people's individual networks. Mm. And nobody was really taking a punt. Nobody was really that bothered because they were reading about all the bands they knew they liked in the NME, and they go and see them. You know.
Yeah.
And then, so.
But that issue about being there being any money in it, I think, is interesting because we kind of look back at a time when groups in the late 70s and early 80s, whatever, were selling quite a lot of records, therefore they must have made some money. Well, no, I'm sure they didn't. A, that they were on record company advances, which and probably left those record companies probably owing quite a lot of money. B, only the songwriter probably would have made a decent amount of money anyway. Did any member of the Skids, apart from the people who wrote the songs, ever make a lot of... Do you remember when we interviewed Pauline Murray of Penetration?
Yes.
And she had a little... In her book, she had a little statement of the profit and loss of Penetration
for Virgin
over 2 years.
Wow. Yes.
Virgin years. And I think I'm right in saying, did they either make or lose 600 quid? I can't remember. It was just nothing. It was absolutely nothing. By the time the expenses had come in, by the time everything that the record company wanted to charge them for had come in, there was nothing. And you kind of got the impression that Penetration were doing quite well.
Well, they had one hit, didn't they?
So, no, people are complaining now, you're not going to make any money out of streaming. Well, no, of course you don't. You get 0.005 pence per track or whatever. But I don't think that's any different from what it was back then. I can't imagine that many people made a decent amount of money if they didn't write the song.
I don't think it is, and I'm not supposed to say this being a musician, but I do think there's a tendency among the musical fraternity to believe that because I've written songs and I play them, I'm entitled to a living from them. And it doesn't work like that. And I think it's simplifying a very complex thing that... You know, that involves many powers that are beyond your control as a musician, i.e. society at large. And, you know, I don't think the streaming scenario, I think it equates to how it's always been, broadly speaking, but just in a different way.
You don't feel you're entitled to a living from them. You'd like them to be popular enough for you to make a living from them. But I don't, do you think you feel that people are, you know, does that guarantee me a career?
I don't know. I think some people are still sold in this myth that, you know, because I am a troubadour or whatever, you know, I deserve to make a living from it automatically. You know, I'm entitled to be paid for all this time I put into writing this average song. There is that because people are, you know, artists are really, they're so sold in their vision a lot of the time. It's hard for them to see anything else.
The other thing, the other factor that is come into play in the last 10, 20 years is that of the money that people spend on music, and this will apply to both going to see live music and also streaming or downloading or whatever, a larger and larger proportion of it goes to a smaller and smaller proportion of the performers. And so the more you pay to go and see Taylor Swift or whoever is the big thing, the less you're going to spend on anything else. Do you know what I mean? It's not passed around equally. You know, people don't think to themselves, well, I tell you what, instead of spending £150 to go and see Taylor Swift, I'll go and see 10 groups who'll cost me £15 each. It doesn't work like that at all, does it? You know, because, here's one of the fundamental problems about, you know, people will always complain that the music business isn't fair. Well, of course it isn't fair. And the reason, there's a very good reason for that, because the public aren't fair. We're not fair. You know, the whole way that we consume these things is not fair at all.
We only listen, think about ourselves.
Right. Yeah, but we listen to a small number of people endlessly, because that's what we like. Yeah. Rather than listening to a wider number of people fewer times, you know, spreading it around. It doesn't work like that. You know what I mean? What drives people is it's a very, very small number of big names, you know. And so the whole notion of the music business ever being fair is just preposterous. It's got unfairness. It's built into its very into its very nature. And you can say exactly the same thing about the film business or the book business or whatever. You know, transfer your complaints about the music business to the book business for a second, Alex.
Yeah.
What? Who are the most successful authors in the UK? Are they the best at authoring? No. They're people famous on the television. It's as simple as that. And they'll come from all kinds of backgrounds.
Yeah.
And that's what sells books. Being famous on the television doesn't mean that everybody's famous on the television is going to do it, but it means that you're not going to do it unless you're famous on the television or you're J.K. Rowling. Yeah? So it's not fair anywhere you look.
But I think people's expectations of what they want from a Band of Change as well, as shows are getting more sophisticated. You know, Taylor's show is a really good example of that.
Yeah.
I feel like successful bands now, they aren't really bands, they're concepts. And a band has to, you know, it's not enough to have four guys with shaggy hair and leather jackets. I mean, that's been done to death, and it clearly hasn't changed the world despite everybody's best efforts. Yes. You know. So that bubble's been popped as well. And I think that Wet Leg and The Last Dinner Party are two really good examples. Wet Leg's a concept, isn't it? It's a big in-joke. And you go knowing that you're going to be immersed in this in-joke for an hour and a half, and you're going to be happy with that, and you're going to leave, you know, having got what you wanted from Wet Leg. The Last Dinner Party are this gothic Renaissance medieval kind of I suppose, throwback in a way. But you know exactly, you're getting the production. You're getting the finely tuned, fully formed production.
You're getting the story. It goes back to Robert Foster's book, 10 Rules of Rock and Roll, 10 Commandments of Rock and Roll, or whatever it's called, isn't it? That we've talked about in the past, that most bands have shown you everything they have to show you by the third number. You know, and there he's talking, and that's absolutely true. You know, all the information that is going to be vouchsafed has already been transmitted by the third number. Whereas, you know, you go and see The Last Dinner Party or whatever, there is a sense that there's a show there, isn't there?
Absolutely.
That's very true about Last Dinner Party. They're very much, they're a kind of video concept, and they're a photo opportunity concept. And they don't actually have a drummer. When they play, they have to bring in somebody else. But that drummer isn't a member of the band, because the band just looks like this particular picture.
Yeah.
I think you're right, actually. It's kind of, and the songs are slightly fantasy, aren't they?
Do you think also there's another thing going on under here, that for young blokes it's all over?
Totally, because young blokes know. As I say, the primary reason why young blokes know now that joining a band isn't a fast track to pulling loads of exciting young ladies in floral print dresses. It's just not. The sex appeal of being in a band is completely gone. It's not a sexy thing anymore. It's just not.
Wow.
Is it? That's interesting.
Serious news.
Not really. That's very interesting. So, because the old thing was, if you hung a guitar around your neck, it was a powerful aphrodisiac, supposedly, wasn't it?
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems, too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and, of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So do you think that's so people don't, do you mean you don't automatically fancy people on stage with?
Yeah, now having a guitar hung around your neck insinuates that you may or may not be homeless.
All right.
So many bubbles popping in this conversation.
Yeah.
But there's also here's another one though that Mark and I were talking about this the other day. You know that you know a lot of what we're talking about here is based on a thing that Will Hutchinson wrote in the Times about why there are no bands, you know, to time with the Brits and so forth. And there's a quotation there from a member of the Last Dinner Party, and not a controversial quote at all, but people launched in on this person saying, oh, well, she went to this posh school or whatever. And they were saying that, you know, has social media just completely killed pop music in the sense that nobody can say anything any longer? And a lot of what male bands used to say was, we're blokes. Look at us. We're out there. We're on the lash. You know, we're wild and crazy. We're raised by wolves. Look at us. We're really strange. You can't say that anymore. You're not allowed that expression.
No, because it sounds predatory or threatening or,
absolutely.
You know. Yeah.
And the only
triggering.
The only people who do it, I realized this recently, you know, that if you watch female comics, as I do endless clips on YouTube shorts or whatever, what do all female comics talk about nearly all the time? Sex. What do all male comics never talk about ever?
They can't. They can't talk about sex.
They simply can't.
Absolutely
it's
cannot.
Absolutely flipped around, you know.
Totally.
And so a lot
it's
of
it's considered to be aggressive and predatory, yes. Isn't it?
So a lot of the kind of behaviours of an, I don't know, Oasis or whatever back in the day, you're simply not allowed those kind of behaviours in the public space anymore. And that was a lot of what rock bands did. A lot of what rock bands did was turn up in the NME every week going, look at us, we're amazing. we go too far. That's our whole thing, you know. Can't do it anymore.
Yeah, so, all the things that they used to celebrate, the drinking, the smoking, the drugging, everything is just now absolute anathema, isn't it? You just can't do it.
Yeah, it's just waiting for somebody to tut out it.
Yeah, it is. It
is. So anyway, so bands, it's all over. That probably means we'll be back next week.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So I was talking to a gentleman of my acquaintance the other day, and one of the things he does is he runs a kind of medieval fair down in Sussex every year where quite significant numbers of people come from for a few consecutive weekends. To sit in the greensward and witness reconstructions of jousting contests or whatever, and probably drink mead and listen to medieval music and so forth. And I was thinking to myself, Alex, you're missing a trick here, because I can well see Alex. I want you to imagine this, ladies and gentlemen. If Alex is kitted out in doublet and hose, and he's equipped with a lute rather than his usual guitar, and he just actually walks around the grounds of this medieval fair, singing Beatles songs adapted for ancient times, I think there could be a real future in it, Alex. Have you? And I put this to you, and I gave you the challenge of recasting some Beatles favourites in the...
I can really picture this.
You can see it, can't you?
So like Festy the Jester. Possibly with a tricorn hat, you know.
Absolutely.
I was
born to do it.
Doubloons.
I think it's going to be really popular. Well, so what would be your repertoire be, Alex, if you're going to do this?
Well, I consulted my pal Richard Engler, who runs Autonomy Music Group, and he gave me a few good ones to kick me off. He suggested From Mead to You.
From Mead to You.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's good.
Very good, very good.
I saw her burning there.
Oh, God.
No.
Let
it bead.
Let it bead.
Yeah.
And she came in through the privy window.
That's a good one. I've got one here. Everybody's got something to hide except me and my Kestrel.
I've got a variation on that, actually.
Go on.
Well, shall I give you my list?
Go on.
I went through them last night and had a great time doing this. Okay, so I'm going to start. This is a bit dodgy. I'm scraping a barrel here, but Anne Boleyn, Go to Him.
That
sort of works.
So yeah. Get my coat. Okay.
Yeah. Get loose.
Yeah.
Baby, You're a Rich Serf.
Yeah.
I put in Chains because that just felt really self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Ride My Horse. Can you guess what that one is?
Was that Drive My Car?
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monk.
Okay. Not as good as Kestrel, but it's good.
Fixing a Murder Hole.
Okay.
Free as a Baron. I Don't Want to Spoil the Jousting Tourney. I Want to Chop Off Your Hand.
Oh, Lord.
This is all getting gruesome.
It's getting too grisly.
Okay. How about Comely Rita?
Do we talk about From Me to Thou or something like that?
I've got She Esteems You.
She Esteems You.
Oh, that's good. Comely Rita's very good.
I've got I'm Happy Just to Joust With You.
Happy Just to Joust With You.
That's very good.
And one slightly older, why don't we do it in the Woad?
Oh, very good.
So, you know, if people have got further ideas for things of this nature, for you know, so we're looking for a set list for Alex in his new career.
As a
wandering minstrel wearing doublet and hose, playing a lute, you know, just wandering around entertaining the customers at a weekend's Renaissance kind of recreation out in the country. I think there's great future.
That's very good.
So, Mark, what were you saying about Patty Boyd and Eric Clapton's love letters? Have you read these?
No. Yes, I have read some, actually, because they were printed, weren't they? I think it's interesting because Patty Boyd is now selling a load of letters that Eric Clapton wrote her. And the first thing you think obviously she must have got Eric Clapton's permission to do this. And indeed she had. And I thought it was a classic win-win situation, actually.
Because it's his copyright, isn't it? If you send a letter, it's your copyright.
Yeah.
Not the person it goes to.
Yeah.
Let that be a lesson to you, young Alex, if that ever happens. Anyway, go on, carry on.
No, I thought it was interesting. And also, I think that whole thing of the Clapton, Patty Boyd, George Harrison love triangle was massively overcooked, wasn't it? I mean, it was just one of those things that happened that we all wanted to believe that, you know, Clapton was a cad and that George had been cruelly cuckolded, you know. But that wasn't the case at all if you look at it. I mean, it's very complicated because Charlotte Martin was Clapton's girlfriend. And then I think after she split up with Clapton, went off with George Harrison. She married Jimmy Page in the end.
God, yes.
Oh, yeah. But she went off with George Harrison in January 1969. So there's a bit in the early part of Get Back, the movie. I think it's around the 6th or 7th of January when he comes in looking a bit ashen-faced. And like, he had a bit of a tough time. Well, the truth is he's been booted out of the home by Patty Harrison. So all that's going on. And that actually Patty and George was obviously having a difficult time for quite a long time. It was clearly over when Clapton and she got together. Also, they're quite interesting, that family, aren't they? Because you've got there's Patty Boyd and then there's Paula Boyd, who also went out with Clapton, the sister, and Jenny Boyd went out with Donovan and Fleetwood Mac. So very amazing family, really. But I think that whole love triangle thing was massively overcooked. But I just thought it was an interesting story because if you look at the letters, Clapton comes out of it terribly sensitive and romantic and poetic and lovelorn. And so he's reflected very well by the sale of these letters, or will be. And of course, she's going to make a big pile of dosh. So it's a very happy situation. Win-win.
I suppose so. Do people still write love letters, Alex? Why am I looking at you?
I don't think they do. I think they send racy texts.
Racy texts?
Yeah.
It's not quite the same, is it?
No, not really.
They're not going to come up at Sotheby's in 40 years. Racy texts sent between, Patsy Kensit and Liam Gallagher. Right. It's just not going to happen. Well, that was pre-text. Pre-text. in those days, wasn't it? So, yeah, we had, talking of the Boyds, we had Jenny Boyd, didn't we, as one of
our guests? We did. She was terrific.
She was fantastic.
Really, really good.
She was really good. I'll tell you something, listeners, something that I'll be quite candid about this. I'll let you in on a bit of a secret. Whenever we do these Word of Your Ear chats or videos or whatever, with people who are senior, we always come off afterwards and we have a chat. So, actually, she was really good, wasn't she? Because it's always your fear is that people won't remember anything at all. She was fantastic.
She was fantastic.
She was really good. And this week we did.
As for Susie Ronson.
Susie Ronson.
She was really good. That's was out,
really
March the 11th.
Really good.
Sue Mick Ronson's wife. And she's written a fantastic book, Me and Mr. Jones, about being David Bowie's stylist and hairdresser and costumier. She was just really sharp and
she's terribly
a good memory.
Terribly
as
good.
As was Steve Howe.
As was Steve Howe. That's what I was going to say, because we achieved a bit of a lifetime ambition the other day to speak to Steve Howe out of Yes, because I still have very fond memories going to see Yes at the LSE in the spring of 1971. And Mark, you saw them in where was
I
it?
I saw them October 71, Southampton Guildhall, yeah. And he was so touched because we started off by saying, we saw you when you were touring 53 years ago. I held up my old copy of Fragile. He was really, really touched, wasn't he?
He was terribly good, terribly good all the way through. And we said, well, you know, when we saw you, you were the new boy who just joined Yes. And now you're the kind of oldest member, to borrow an expression from P.G. Woodhouse's golfing stories. So Steve Howe actually had a list somebody had sent him of what is it, Mark? I think you've got it there.
I've got it from the oldest musicians. Still touring, recording and kicking. Shall I read some out? I mean, I could read
on
this. It's really interesting. Willie Nelson's at the top, 90.
90. He's going on tour this summer with young whippersnapper Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan, 82. And 82. John Cougar Mellencamp. Amazing. John Mayall, 90. Frankie Valli, 89. Herb Albert is 88, Buddy Guy 87, Ringo Starr 83. So it does seem quite old now, 83, doesn't it? Tom Jones 83, Dionne Warwick 83, Smokey Robinson 83, Bob Dylan, we've done, John McLaughlin's 82, Paul Simon 82. He's still retiring, isn't he? Paul Simon. Bowing out.
He still does interviews and so forth. I don't think he's performing live. Anyway, go on, carry on.
Yeah, Andy Summers, 81. That's interesting, isn't
Andy
it?
Andy Summers,
could that be right? Yes.
It could be right. Because Andy Summers was a member of Zoot Money's Big Roll Band in like 1966. So, yes, it's perfectly possible.
I'm just going to quickly really Google makes Andy Summers was, I think he was older than various members of the Beatles, wasn't he? Yeah, here we are. Born 31st of December 1942. So that makes him older than George Harrison. Isn't that amazing?
That is extraordinary. And at the time, you know, when the Police were really big, kind of early 80s, we never remarked upon it at all, did we?
No.
That he definitely belonged to an older generation.
Completely. He was 7 or 8 years older.
Yeah.
The Sting, wasn't he? Isn't that amazing?
So what are you saying? Debbie Harry was how old?
Debbie Harry is, where is she? 78. She's 78.
78. So Steve Howe, who was on this list, is 77, isn't 70, that right?
76, I think.
Right.
Isn't that fantastic?
So do you think we'll see a day? Now, you know, so Bob Dylan and like is still kind of on tour at the age of 82. And, you know, when Bob Dylan grew up, nobody would have been performing that late in life, you know, and people wouldn't have lived beyond 75 or whatever in those days. But obviously life expectancy is increasing all the time. Is it not likely that Ed Sheeran will still be playing at the age of 100?
It's quite possible, isn't it?
Wow.
Expensive medical care. A fearsome exercise regimen throughout
his life.
He'd
probably be in very good nick. He probably really looks after himself, you know, in a way that earlier generations didn't.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be, you know, there will be, you know, geezer stock in the year, you know, in 40 years' time, will be, you know, Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran, Harry Styles, and so forth, will all be taking the stage at the age of 95 plus. I think that's going to happen, Alex, don't you?
I'm sure it's going to.
I shall look forward to Liam Gallagher hobbling on age 92 and wheezing his way through cigarettes and alcohol.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
Has anybody joined our new Patreon family, Alex?
They have.
Good.
We've got a bunch of new patrons, whatever the collective noun is for a group of patrons.
Right.
Sign up of patrons. I'm going to read their names out now for you. I'm going to start with John Williams.
John Williams is, can I make a joke out of John Williams? I don't know if I can. Classical guitar player
and film score composer.
Famous film composer, indeed.
And yeah, very, very glad to have such a celebrity on board.
Member of Sky, wasn't it? A group called Sky, wasn't it?
Sky with two Ys or something spelt weirdly, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know about that. Anyway, carry on.
David A. James.
David James.
Was there a member of Modern Romance called David James?
There was a member of Modern Romance called David James, nice bloke, who subsequently did a lot of work with Jar Wobble, who was a guest of ours only the other day on Word Career. With his excellent autobiography just come out.
Was there also a goalkeeper called David James?
There is. Well, he retired goalkeeper called David James. Yes, indeed. Carry on. Who else we got?
We've got Jack at the Beach.
Jack at the Beach?
Yeah.
Is that possibly
not their real name?
No, possibly not. Well, welcome nonetheless.
Jean Laplage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Laplage. Matthew Crossley.
Matthew Crossley. Excellent. Well, it's always nice to... to welcome you on board.
Matthew Crossley sounds like a Knox County defensive player.
Right, 70s. Okay.
Very good.
The 70s. Because nowadays they're all called Kyle, aren't they? You see that?
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on.
Stuart Hanscombe.
Good. Listen, all these people are immensely welcome. It's really important to us to have the support of these people in order to maintain the extraordinary level of productivity that we have established. Carry on, anybody else?
Well, indeed, Alan with a U, Griffiths.
Alan with a U, how does that work? Where does the U go?
The U goes between the L and the M. Yeah, otherwise I guess it would be Alan.
Alan! Oh,
yeah,
I see.
Yeah, very good.
I was thinking of Alan with an extra U. Okay, of course, indeed, yes.
Andy Gunton.
Andy, that's good. Well, Andy Gunton was, as we all know, his bass player with the Skids in about 1979. I wonder what he'd been up to. Carry on.
Ian Marshall Bennett.
Ian Marshall Bennett. Very good. Double barreled. That's you get a special discount if you're double barreled.
You do.
Actually, and talking of discounts, the next lot are annually subscribed. And if you subscribe annually to our Patreon, you get a 15% discount. So, Philip Davenport.
Philip Davenport.
Oh, PG Woodhouse character. Good bit.
Do you remember Davenport's Beer at Home? Do you remember that, Mark? He used to be advertised on the television.
No.
This is a classic memory of the 50s and 60s where people couldn't afford beer. You basically signed up for something called Beer at Home. They used to come and deliver it to your house. I think Davenport's Beer at Home. Carry on. Sorry, floundering. Carry on.
Craig Butcher.
Craig Butcher. Good to hear from you. Very good.
Dev Sherlock.
Dev. What's
that's
Dev?
A good word. Dev. Yeah, what's Dev? Devlin? No, I don't know.
Could be Devlin. Could be Devon. Devon Malcolm. He's fast bowler for England. Carry on.
Martin Davison.
Martin Davison, good. Glad to have you here.
And finally, last but not least, is Malcolm.
Just plain Malcolm.
No surname needed.
No good. They named it once. Yeah.
Okay. So, what are the benefits of people being Patreon supporters, Alex, in case anybody's not aware of them?
Okie doke. So, we have various tiers of membership. And but first of all, if every subscriber.
Have you noticed whenever Alex says tears, Mark, we're doing this on Zoom so we can see each other. Whenever Alex uses the word tears, he goes, tears. He holds his hand up like that in a kind of jabbing sideways.
Yes. To make sure we totally understand what's been discussed. Well,
tears. Eyes.
No, not tears. Yes, yeah.
Every patron, though, gets a mention on the pod and included in our Thank You Hall of Fame on our website. But the first tier is the Friday Night Quiz tier, which grants you access to our weekly Friday Night Quiz every Friday at 6 p.m.
Which is very good fun and heartily recommended.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the next tier up from that is the podcast tier, where you get early access, early ad-free access, might I add, to all of our podcast audio content. The next one up from that is our videocast tier, where you get early ad-free access to all our video content. So Word in Your Attics, Word in Your Ears, Word Down Your Ways, all that kind of stuff. And then above that is our Clubhouse tier, where you get a special birthday treat. Mark and Dave will digitally come round to your house and rummage through your record collection in your very own Word in Your Ear videocast. And also, you get an invite to our Word socials as well.
In
a pub in central London, some beer and some great conversation. And I should add also that all patrons also get first dibs on any live events that we are putting on.
So it's thoroughly worthwhile. Let's be honest.
Absolutely, absolutely,
it makes absolute sense. Get in there. And stay in there.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.